Now, once again, here's Mark. Rolled out to my
Chevrolet. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about cars and car repair and questions. And, of course, air conditioning is a big issue right now. But let me tell you about a really great shop first. Air Park Auto Service is up in Scottsdale. It's near the Scottsdale Air Park. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, which is just south of Frank Lloyd Wright. They're family-owned and operated. They've been on my best car repair list for years and years, and they're a state-of-the-art, clean, and green facility. So Nadine runs Air Park Auto. Her husband, Stacy, passed away a few years ago, and she decided to stay on, and it's one of the only lady-owned and operated auto repair shops in the state of Arizona that I know about. So if you live in the North Scottsdale area, and actually we're talking about from McCormick Ranch north to Carefree, from 56th Street all the way to Fountain Hills, that's the only shop in that area that I recommend. All righty. We'll talk about, by the way, 602-508-0960. That's the phone number, 602-508-0960. If you have a question or comment or something like that, then feel free to just give us a call. Air conditioning. We've talked about air conditioning in the past, but I want to kind of recap. R12, we just call it 12, that was the first refrigerant. And when we got R12, there was a little sticker on the car. Oftentimes, there was a little sticker on the evaporator case, which is on the passenger side of the car, right on the other side of the windshield wiper. And it said that this car held 22 ounces. We never knew where we were at. So there was no such thing as a dipstick with the air conditioning system. So sometimes you add a little, sometimes you let a little out, sometimes you take it all down and you kind of look at a can and you see each can of Freon could be a 10-ounce can, a 12-ounce can, a 14-ounce can, and a 16-ounce can. Well, few people just kept track of that. And so they just grab whatever's on the shelf and put it in your car. We didn't do very well with R12, and there are some cans of refrigerant that are sold at the different retail auto parts stores where it's a tall can and it's pretty expensive and it's got a gauge on it and it's got red here and it's got white here and then in the middle is green. And it tells you to hook up this hose to your car and just pull the trigger until the needle gets into the green and you're home free. Nothing could be further from the truth, and let me explain. The air that flows across the condenser. First of all, the condenser is a big radiator-looking thing in front of the radiator on your car. So if you look through your grill, there's an aluminum-finned item, and that's called the condenser. Then we have the compressor underneath the dash, or actually in the engine compartment driven by a belt. And then we have an evaporator behind the glove box. So we exchange heat at the condenser, and we also change it liquid to vapor, vapor to liquid. Then, from there, we go into the evaporator core, and that's where it gets cold. That's where the Freon gets cold. And behind the evaporator, again, looks like a little radiator, there's a fan. So as the fan blows over the evaporator, that's how you get cold air. So anyway, the ambient temperature has everything to do with what your air conditioning does, as well as we need airflow across the condenser. Now keep in mind, the condenser's up there with the radiator, so we need airflow across the condenser. So the Freon level is one, the ambient air temperature is two, how well we're drawing airflow across the radiator. Now, in the older model cars that have R12, in the older model cars, I'm sorry for the delays, folks, we're working on that. I'm sure it's on my end. But on the older cars, we have a fan that's supposed to draw air across the radiator. If that fan doesn't work, then there is no air across the radiator, which causes the high pressure side to skyrocket. So when you have all these variables, you hook up your gauges, and you really can't control all the variables. And the variables determine how much you're supposed to have in the system, how much Freon you're supposed to have in the system.
Thank you, folks. We're going to go to the telephone. We're going to go to the old-fashioned lines, and we're going to see if we can make this work. Nevertheless, R12 and R134, depending on which expert you talk to, but most scientists agree that somewhere in the 10, 20, 30, 40-year range, that those refrigerants stayed in the atmosphere. And evidently they know that because we start putting our 12 in cars in the 60s, and evidently there's still our 12 in the atmosphere. So 12 and 134, those are your two big dogs. Now we just came out with a refrigerant called 1234. Now, this refrigerant only lasts hours in the atmosphere. So it's going to be good for our atmosphere. Back in the old days, a lot of times the refrigerant, a repair shop would just vent the refrigerant into the air because we had no recovery equipment. We had no way to recover that refrigerant. So if you wanted to drain the system and start all over again, you'd just pull a line or pull a Schrader valve and let her go. That was just something that we did in the 50s and the 60s. We just didn't have recovery systems. So we went to 134, same kind of situation. We had some recovery systems towards the end of that period of time, but probably in the last 10 years, they've been popular and they've been accessible and they've been economical. So now we have 1234, and 1234 is a real environmental friendly refrigerant. It's slightly flammable. Now, we've tested this, and we held a match to the Freon, and we can't get it to light because I think it has less than 1% of some flammable liquid in it. I'm not sure what that is. But there haven't the box behind the glove box that has the cold evaporator in it. That's where you get your cold air. They're reinforcing that box in case there's an explosion in the passenger compartment of the car. So obviously, they know that there is a minute possibility that there's going to be an explosion in a car, and they don't much care if it's outside the car, but they do care if it's inside the car, and because they're reinforcing the box, and the way they're reinforcing the box, it doesn't appear that this is kind of like a bunker. It doesn't appear that this is something that looks like you could set off a big explosive inside this box and not hurt anybody. So that kind of suggests that the possibility of an explosion is minor. Secondly, that kind of suggests that if there is an explosion, it can be contained by this double-walled plastic item, which is the case for the evaporator or whatever it is. Okay, so we're going to talk about price because that's what you really care about. The old R12 was about $6.95 an ounce. So if your car took 10 ounces, it's 10 times 695. And the R12 systems were usually 2 or 3 pounds. Okay, so 2 pounds at 16 ounces is 32 ounces. So we always measured it in ounces, but we didn't really measure it back then in ounces. We didn't know. So the R134 is $6.95 today. And it has a lot to do with the volume of Freon on the market, and then how much you buy. So the 134 is going to be between $10 and $12 an ounce. And so we could be almost double of what the old refrigerant is. However, the newer model cars, they won't have as much refrigerant in them. Okay, so how are we going to change, or how has our industry changed? Well, it's changed for the better about 5-6 years ago when they came out an electronic dipstick for your car. Now, we never had that before, and the electronic dipstick allows us to hook up a machine to your car. We're going to suck all of your refrigerant out. We're going to clean it of any debris, any pieces of metal from the air conditioning compressor, any kind of ground-up metal, we're going to clean it. We're also going to remove the water from it. And at that point, we're going to know that it's 20 ounces. The machine actually weighs the refrigerant. So you look at the tag on the car, and it's 28 ounces. So you're going to add 8 ounces back to that person's car, and at that particular point, they are full, full, full. They are not short of Freon. They're not over Freon. They are perfect with Freon. Folks, we've had one of those machines for a long time for 12 and 134. And by the way, there's one machine that probably is about $8,000. That's for 12. Then the machine for the 134 was probably $8,500 to $9,000. And then the new recovery piece of equipment, I don't know what it's going to cost. I just ordered one, but I know it's going to be between $8,000 and $10,000. But these are electronic dipsticks, and this is where you are best served. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss, I'm going to give you some other hints to keep your air conditioning as cold as possible and to keep your costs down as far as possible. And if you have any questions, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock talking about car and car repair problems. If you don't mind, I'd like to tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been on Washington at 40th Street for probably 40, maybe 50 years. Paul and Phil and have been doing transmissions for a very long time. They understand how a transmission works. They understand how the new ones work. And all they're really doing is shifting your car with electronics as opposed to shifting your car with pressure or throttle. So they understand everything there is to know. So if you need a transmission diagnosis, you want somebody just to take a ride with you while you can make it happen, make whatever happen happen, then the guys at Automatic Transmission Exchange are more than happy to help you with that. And all you have to do is stop by. And it's probably in your best interest not to stop by for obvious reasons on Monday mornings and Friday afternoons. Okay, we were talking about refrigerant. We talked about the three refrigerants, R12, R134, and what now we call now 1234. And we talked about the new electronic machines that are really dipsticks. Folks, we started this years and years ago because we got one of the very first machines because the company that began to make them asked us to test it. And our machine was connected through the internet, and we would download at night the information from the machine. So they could see what we were doing. They could see us connected to the car. They could see us suck the refrigerant out. They could see us weigh in it. And most of this is automatic, by the way. You just tell the machine to do it, and it does it. Then it also looked at how much Freon we punched in, and then they would look at the VIN number of the car and say, yes, that tag was correct. And then we'd put it back in and so forth and so on. And they would monitor the pressure readings when we first started and the pressure readings when we ended. Well, that was a pretty nifty experience because we determined that by putting exactly the amount of refrigerant in your car, that we could move you from 60 to 45. We could move you from 50 to 41. And folks, really and truly, 55 degrees out of the center vent, driving down the road with your fan speed on 3, that is a very, that's kind of the line. We want it less than 55. Now, let me explain. We got to move through the air, so we want the car going 35, 45 miles an hour. We want the speed of the fan not to be on the highest one because that dilutes the cold value of the evaporator. So if I were to gently blow across an ice cube, gently, more than likely my hand would feel cold air. But if I put a big gasoline-powered weed blower or leaf blower on that ice cube, you would never feel any cold air on the other side. So that's why we use speed 3. So the fan speed is at 3. We're on recirculation. We're driving down a road at 35, 45 miles an hour. Anything less than 55 is perfect. However, now that we've had this machine for 8 or 9 years, we've determined that some cars, and I'm not going to tell you what kind of cars they are because I don't want to start a fight, but some cars we can get down in the 38 to 42 degrees, and we call that throwing ice cubes at you. I mean, this car will literally throw ice cubes out of the vent, not literally, but figuratively, it throws ice cube out of the vent. And we also know that anything north of 55, we can knock off 10 degrees easy by just putting the proper amount of refrigerant in your car. So this new machine's coming out for 1234. Now, by the way, the fittings on the R12, which is version 1 of the refrigerant, are quite different than version 2 and version 3. So it necessitates buying all new equipment every time they change the kind of Freon in your car. Now, that doesn't include R22 that your house has. And we can't put, although people do put R22 and car refrigeration units. R22 is really for your house and your business, the air conditioning is on your roof, the big industrial ones. So we actually have four different kinds of refrigerant, but only three of them are actually work, you know, will work on your automobile. So not too long ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, after numerous requests for service on the new 1234 cars, and that's the refrigerant name, it's R1234, that we knew that we didn't have the piece of equipment, but in reality, most of those cars are still under warranty. So we're not likely to see a bunch of those cars. They actually started with the new Freon sometime in 11 or 12, but it was a very limited supply of cars. But in 17, we're starting to see the overwhelming majority of the cars come out with the new refrigerant. I'll just call the 1234 the new refrigerant. So we've had a couple of requests to service it, and we can't. So I've ordered the machine, and like I said, I don't know what it's going to cost. It's going to be between $8,000 and $10,000. I'm quite sure about that. And we've ordered some refrigerant. Now, let me explain on the refrigerant. The refrigerant comes in a 10-pound can, and the old ones used to come in a 20-pound can. The old ones, a 20-pound can, might cost you $150. A 10-pound can of the new refrigerant is more than $850. And you figure 10 pounds at 16 ounces, that's 160 ounces. So you have a situation that refrigerant cost has gone up dramatically. And obviously, you'll have to see that. And you will see that at the appropriate time. But I would strongly suggest that when you have your air conditioning serviced, and if those of you that haven't had your air conditioning serviced for maybe two or three, or I'd say two or more years, I'm pretty sure shops with the proper recycling equipment, servicing equipment, the electronic dipsticks, I like to call them, those shops can improve what you have. I'll tell you a couple of stories. We had a guy stop by, and he had a car, and he says, nobody's been able to fix my air conditioning. I'm not happy, and I'm not willing to pay you, because Mark always says, don't pay for guesses. So staff says, well, so a lot of people have been messing with your air conditioning. Yes. Has anybody made a difference? No. So we check to make sure the fans are blowing across the radiator, across the condenser. We make sure everything's in order, and we make sure that we don't have the heater blend door on, because there's a door underneath your dash, and if the door goes to the left, it gives you cold air. If it goes to the right, it gives you hot air. And sometimes that son of a gun sticks in the middle, so you get a little bit cold, a little bit of hot, and the air conditioning feels lukewarm. But in reality, there's a problem underneath the dash. So we make sure that's okay. We suck his Freon out, and it's 11 ounces over. So we put his refrigerant back in, and now that the service costs $125 because it almost takes an hour to do it. $125, and in his case, we didn't give him credit for the Freon. We just keep that. However, if you're deficient, then you pay for the deficiency. So if there's 2 ounces, you pay for 2 ounces. It's usually $7 an ounce, so that's going to add $14 to your $125 bill. So the guy says, I'm not going to pay you until I'm sure this is a better thing. So I'm on my way to Tucson, and my son tells him, look, if you're not happy, just pass on by on your way back from Phoenix, because you don't have to stop, just pass on by. We'll eat the whole bill. So he says, that's fine. So I've only got 9 seconds to tell you, but on the other side of the break, I'll tell you how that turned out. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. All about that demon, automobile, the metal monster with the polyglass wheels. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We'll be here till noon. We're talking about your air conditioning system. If you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960. Okay, before the break, I was telling you about a guy that came to the shop, and he was mad, but he really wasn't mad at us. And I've had a lot of people work on my car, and nobody can fix it, and all that kind of stuff. And so he said, okay, well, just let us look at it. So we checked the obvious stuff. We made sure that the fans were moving air across the condenser. We made sure that the heater control valve or the blend door wasn't stuck. And I think he had somewhere around 51, 52 degrees of air. Now, to our well-known customers, we have a bunch of small thermostats. They look like an ice pick with a round dial on the top of it. And we will oftentimes stick that in the center vent of the car. We would ask them to run it on speed 3, and we ask them to only take a measurement when they're doing 35 to 45 miles an hour. And obviously, if you're below 55, we really don't need to service your air. But if you're above 55, we think we can make it better. So we say to this guy, you know, well, let us look at it. So we look at it and we go, okay, well, obviously it's either too full or too little of Freon. So you want to go to the next step? And he says, yeah. So we do it, and we find out that his refrigerant is low. So we suck his out. We clean it up. And clean it up, we filter it, and there's no more hard particles in it. And then we remove the water, and then we stick it back in the car. And then in his case, I think there was 2 or 3 ounces or 4 ounces he was shy. So we add brand new 3 or 4 ounces of refrigerant. We button it up. We make sure that we didn't create any leaks where we connect the hoses to his air conditioning system. And we went out and said, okay, we're done. And he had okayed $125, which is the checkout. And then we told him we wouldn't know how much Freon it took until we were almost done, but it was like $6.95 an ounce. So we said, he was just really skeptical, and he says, you know, your dad always says that you don't want to pay it for anybody guessing or anything like that. So my son said to him, just take it. And the guy said he's on his way to Tucson, and my son says, just take it. And he says, if we haven't made it better, on your way back from Phoenix, just pass the old Warner Road exit and just keep on going. We don't mind losing three ounces or 4 ounces of refrigerant. I really don't remember how much it was. So the guy goes, okay. And so here's the end of the story, according to my son. About 20 minutes later, the guy calls the shop, and he says to Alan, I'll be by to pay my bill. And Alan says, are you doing that because your conscience is bothering you? And he goes, no, I'm doing it because it clearly is blowing cold, colder than it was, a lot colder than it was. So he says, I'm happy, and I'll happy to pay your bill. So with respect to you, customers, listeners of mine, I would strongly suggest you look for a guy who has a recovery, recycling, and then he can tell you what you're low and what you need. Now, here's a problem. Most everybody is somewhere between 75 and 150 for the, quote, service. And I can tell you right now, we're kind of in the middle of that. I think we're 125. Well, that's not really in the middle, but we're at 125. So it's about an hour's worth of time. Our labor rate's 118. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. Sometimes we have to clean the bugs off the condenser, and we do that with water and brushes. So there's that stuff is included. And then you're going to pay for any ounce of refrigerants that we put back in your car. Then the number one and number two are about $7 an ounce, and the new one, the newest one, is going to be somewhere in the vicinity of $10 to $12 an ounce. So anyway, after they do that, then hopefully you have taken a measurement or they have taken a measurement from the center vent. But I can assure you, most people can tell immediately if they've made your air conditioning better, is what I mean to say. So they'll know it pretty quick. So if you take it in, ask them how much their service is, and ask them what's going to happen. Here's what happens to the refrigerant sometimes. Let's say your car holds 20 ounces of refrigerant. So they take the refrigerant out, and they find out that you're at 15 ounces. So they clean up yours, put it back in. Then they add 5 to it. Now you're full. Some shops are charging you for all 20 ounces. And the question then becomes is, wait a minute, 15 of that was mine. And they say, yeah, but I gave it back to you in a completely different condition. I scrubbed and cleaned and filtered and removed the moisture from your refrigerant. So basically, you gave me old, contaminated refrigerant, and I gave you brand new refrigerant. So you might see that. But there's a lot of us that don't buy that. So there's a lot of us that say, we're not going to charge you for cleaning up your refrigerant, because that's really covered in the initial service, which is between, you know, $125 and give or take $10, $15. So that's kind of what it works out to be, is you need to ask them two questions. What's your initial service? And number two, are you going to charge me for all the refrigerant, or are you just going to charge me what you add to the refrigerant? The third question you can ask, but it's really insignificant, is if I'm 3 ounces over, are you going to give me credit for that? And I can tell you, I'm not going to give you credit for it, because first of all, you have no way to carry it out. I can't give you 2 ounces of Freon in your hand. I can't give it to you in a can. I can't give you back 2 ounces. So there's no way for you to carry it home. So I'm not giving you credit for the if you're 2 ounces over and I have to suck 2 ounces out of it and clean it and put it all back in, but less 2 ounces. I'm not going to do that. The fact of the matter is that 95% of the cars come in deficient, and then there's about 5% that have been overcharged, and typically they're overcharged because the grandson decided to go to the Three Whisker Kids Auto Parts store and buy some refrigerant and put it in there, and actually he overcharged the heck out of it. So what do we do with your refrigerant? Well, we can recycle it, and we can reuse it. So, in fact, that 3 ounces or 5 ounces that we took out of your car, we're going to use it again, but we still have to process it through. So that's how it happened. 602-508-0960 if you have a question, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. If you'd like to join the conversation with the air conditioning, which is what we're talking about, the phone number is 602-508-0960. And, Dan, I just got your email, so I'm going to answer that for you in just a second here. But I wanted to talk about Kurt's Auto Repair. He's up on I-17 in Bell. And those of you that have listened to the show, you really know that I like Kurt's. And I'll tell you why I like Kurt's. It's because of Kurt and then Eric. Kurt and Eric and the service writer, and I'll think of his last name or his first name in just a minute. Jeff. Those guys are really good at what they do. And Eric and Jeff are ASE Master Certified Technicians. And one of them runs the shop and one of them runs the service writer job and parts and stuff like that. But he knows what he's doing. And one of the nicest things that Kurt and his wife do is when you're a new customer, within about a week after you visit their shop, then Kurt's wife's going to show up at your door and bring you a basket of handmade pastries. And it's their way to say thank you. Now, you're not going to get that more than once. But they're just saying thank you for trusting us, and we hope you'll continue to do business with us. So Kurtz is on I-17 and Bell, both the northeast corner, and he works on both gas and diesel as well. Okay, we're talking about refrigerant, and we're talking about the differences between the refrigerants and the cost associated with the refrigerant. And Dan sent me an email, and he says, my 83 Mercedes-Benz, the AC needs to be charged, but the shop tells me that it has to be converted to the R134, an expensive proposition. Is this the only avenue? This is a real big concern because let's compare the two systems. R12 was just a different animal than R134. And remember, we have three major parts of your air conditioning system. We have the condenser, which is in the front of your car behind your grill, and airflow across it helps drive the heat away. So we don't want it sweating up there. We want airflow to cool it off. Then we have the evaporator, which is behind your glove box, and that's the thing that gets ice cold, and the fan blows on the evaporator, and it blows out cold air. And we also have the compressor. Now, what's different about 12 and 134 is if you do the exchange and you upgrade somebody from 12 to 134, then you have to almost always change the condenser, which means you have to re-engineer and modify the car, and then you ultimately have to replace two hoses, or at least modify the air conditioning hoses because the fittings will change. So while the two that are on this side of the condenser, on the driver's side of the condenser, they're going to be the same, the other two that go to the condenser are going to change. So I want to tell you, we have chosen to never convert anybody to 134. We have a sufficient amount of R12, and we don't use that excuse that we don't have R12, so we have to convert you to 134. R12 is still available, and like I said, right now we're selling R12 for $7 an ounce, and we're selling 134 for $7 an ounce, so there's not a whole big difference. But I have chosen not to do any retrofitting. I have chosen not to do any conversions between 12 and 134 because 12 is the first version of refrigerant, 134 is the second, and then 1234 is now the third, and that's in pretty much 2017 and from now on. So, Dan, to answer your question, I think you should find somebody who has some R12. I think you should find somebody who has a machine that can suck yours out and then put the right amount back in it. During that process, Dan, we're going to create a vacuum on your system, the machine is, and then it's going to let it sit there. It's going to just kind of hold itself for a specific amount of time. As you can imagine, we suck out all the refrigerant, and then we pull a vacuum on the system. And if the vacuum starts off at like 15 inches of vacuum, and then after 3 or 4 minutes, it drops to 10, that tells us you have a pretty big leak. So putting refrigerant back in the system without finding and fixing the leak is kind of silly. The flip side of that coin is if we draw a vacuum and we're at 15 or 16 or 17 or 18 inches of vacuum, I don't care where we're at, and after 3, 4, 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, we haven't lost any vacuum, then that's perfect. At least we know there's nothing big leaking in your system. Now, when your car is off and your key is in your pocket, your air conditioning system has somewhere around 60 on the low side and 60 on the high side. That's PSI, pounds per square inch. 60 PSI on the low, 60 PSI on the high, somewhere close to that. When you start the car and drive it down the road, the low side goes from 60 to 30 or 40, maybe 50. The high side goes from 60 to up to 300. And so, as you can imagine, when the key's in your pocket and they're both at 60 pounds, there might not be a whole lot of leaking going on. But when you start driving down the road and that high side starts going to 300 PSI, you can imagine that there might be a leak you wouldn't otherwise find at 60 pounds. So 300 and 60 pounds, quite different. So that's the kind of situation we're up against. Well, Gil, we've got a caller. Who have we got?
We have Harry. He's on the line.
Harry, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. Good show. Good information. Hey, I got a question. Back in the old days, they had a sight glass just before you went into the condenser. And I think a lot of people, including myself, just kind of went by that sight glass. And if it had some bubbles, you added a little bit and watched your gauges to see what happened. Do you have any comments on that?
You know, that was a way that we could do it. But here's the deal. Let's turn this around just a little bit, and I'm not going to talk to you, Harry. I'm going to talk to your buddies, okay? All right.
Oh, boy.
So, Harry, when your buddies were doing that, I'll bet that they had their gauges hooked up. I bet they were looking at the sight glass.
Right.
And I bet that they were just – and the car was at idle, and I bet they were just kind of adding until the sight glass went clean, right?
I forgot one other thing. Usually you had your 20-inch box fan sitting in front of the radiator blowing some air across it.
Harry, stop taking my thunder, okay? Stop taking my thunder. Well, that's only one of it. We need a box fan blown across the condenser. We need to bring up the idle. And then we have to have some kind of a conversion as to what the ambient temperature is and what it isn't. You see, if the ambient temperature is 50 degrees, then we should get that pretty close to blowing an ice cube. But it also changes the sight glass. So if the ambient temperature is 50 degrees or if the ambient temperature is 120 degrees, there's going to be a difference in that sight glass. So the answer to your question is those cars that had sight glasses, and folks, what it is, it's this round eye that's clear that's smaller than a dime. And it was in your high side, and you would look at it, and if bubbles came through it, you could add refrigerant till the bubbles disappeared. So they called it a refrigerant sight glass, and that was kind of the very first thing that we used to think that we were filling your car up perfectly. But yes, Harry, there's three things. Box fan in front of the condenser, bring the idle up, and look at the ambient temperature. And once you had those three under control, you could then look at the sight glass and determine where you want it. That was kind of a rough number, and that had everything to do with the variables I just described. Oh, and the fourth variable was what was your fan speed? Was your fan speed on 1, 2, 3, or 4? If your fan speed's on 1, we're going to get colder air out of it because when you blow across an ice cube and it's gentle, you blow across, you know, you go like this, just like you're blowing out a match. Well, that's not going to create a lot of cold air because we're not moving a lot of air. But 2 and 3 are going to move a lot of air, and that's going to give you a little colder air. And 4 is going to kind of give you a defrost, a half defrost mode. So, yes, Harry, you're exactly right. The sight glass was the very first invention that kind of gave us a shotgun approach to when your refrigerant was full. Do we agree?
We agree. I got another question. Is there an old refrigeration museum where I can donate some of my old gauges and stuff like that. I've even got a 20-pound deal of R12 that's never been opened. So.
Oh, I'll buy that from you.
Really?
Oh, heck yes.
Okay.
I'll buy that from you.
And
like I said, let me tell you something, Harry, and don't tell anybody this. Probably it was more than 20 years ago, there was a group of Tempe shops and Scottsdale shops that got the brilliant idea that we were going to buy a train car full of 12 and 20-pound containers. Well, when we found out that a train car was something like $100,000, then we shifted our want down to just pallets. And I remember buying 10 pallets, and I remember my wife was fit to be tied. She was just madder than, and if I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was pretty close to like a dollar an ounce. Now, keep in mind, I'm selling it for $6.95 right now.
Right.
And in order, and I'm probably making a dollar on it, so it's gone up $5 an ounce. So I'm still working off the last pallet, but I am proud that we still have 12. And if you don't want that refrigerant, I can look up my price on it, and I will give you exactly what my cost is.
All right, that sounds good.
So, all right, well, Harry, thank you very much.
Have a good day. Thank you.
You betcha.
Mark, Daniel is next.
Daniel, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Oh, hi, Mark. Excuse me. On my Power Wagon 77.
Uh-huh.
Is it worth the money to go ahead and put on the disc brakes in the back?
Have you got disc brakes on the front?
Yes.
Okay, now, the answer is not only do you have to change the master cylinder, because the master cylinder right now has a small compartment and a big compartment.
Oh, yeah.
And the big compartment is for the disc brakes, and the small compartment is for the back brakes. And so you're going to have to change the master, so you're going to look up your Power Wagon, but there is no changeover because your Power Wagon never came with rear disc anyway. So you can buy a kit on the Internet to put rear disc brakes, but you're going to have to change the master, and you're going to have to probably put new backing plates on it, and you're going to need a new proportioning valve. The proportioning valve is set up to meter the amount of pressure to the front and the back. So it's about 60% of the pressure to the front and 40% to the back. If you can find a kit that has a master, a proportioning valve, the backing plates, and gives you a number for the calipers, a number that you can cross to Bendix or Wagner, then I say go for it. The last thing is the real question and the hard part of this is not all the nuts and bolts, is how are you going to hook up the parking brake?
I have somebody else do it.
See, the parking brake right now has a little lever that, you know, spreads out your rear shoes and your rear drum, so you have an emergency brake or a parking brake. The disc brakes work off of a completely different system, so you have to redesign the cable assembly to pull the disc brake, to pull on the caliper, to have it lock up the rear brakes. And 95% of the cars, of the hot rods we see, that come in that have four-wheel disc brakes do not have a parking brake. And you have to think, if it's an automatic hot rod, that's cool. But if you got a four-speed, I don't care what gear you got in it, if it's a big enough slope, that car will go thunk, 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 and it'll move. And so you're going to have to chalk the tires if you've got it.
I'm on a slope. I use the parking gear to not jam it and park, you know?
Oh, well, in park you'd be fine because you'd be up against the parking pole. So you wouldn't need a parking brake necessarily. But if you have a stick shift, then the car's going to roll.
Sometimes on the older vehicle, if I'm on the hill and park, I've had to push it forward to get it out of park.
And you know, again, if you have a parking brake, Daniel, and that happens to you, what you do is on a hill, you stop with your brake, and then you apply your parking brake, let the truck settle, then put it into park.
Yes, yes.
And you won't have that problem anymore. Just let the truck settle with your parking brake, and then put it in park and shut it off. But your wife probably, she could have taught you that, Daniel.
So the disc brake system, we're talking what, $1,300, $1,500?
It depends on who's going to install them and the quality of the system that you have. I can tell you that about half of the people in my world that try to do disc brakes end up with their car being towed to the shop, and we finish it. And most of the time, the cost is associated with just starting over, because you just start over. And bending lines and that kind of stuff is what makes it really tough. So my suggestion is find your kit, find a shop that is willing to install your kits, and go from there. Anyway, thank you very much, Daniel. Anybody else, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break for the end of the hour, and then we're going to be back at about 3 minutes after the top of the hour, so 11:03, we'll be back. 602-508-0960. This is the number, 602-508-0960, and you'll talk to Gil, and we'll get you. Thank you very much.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour, we're here going to talk about car repair, and we're going to finish up our conversation about air conditioning. I actually spent the few minutes during the break to look up how many ounces of R12, R134, and R1234, how much we've sold to date for this year, and I'll share that with you in just a second. S&S Tire serves everybody in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have the most comprehensive line of tires that I've personally ever seen, which means that when you go in there and you ask them to give you an estimate on four tires, they can actually look at the size you have, and they're going to have that size in a variety of qualities. So you can say, I want a good, better, best price, and they can pull that off. So if you want a good one, because maybe you don't drive that far, maybe you don't want to pay for a premium tire, maybe you don't ever get on the highway, and all you do is drive to the Circle K and to church every day, or not every day, but once a week, then you might not want to buy the top-of-the-line tires. But one way or another, S&S Tire can help you. Now, all the way from wheelbarrow tires to tractors and everything in between, they've got. So if you're looking for any kind of tire and you get that, we don't stock that kind of tire, then I would strongly suggest that S&S would be a place you'd go. They also do everything related to tires, so they do alignments and suspension work. Again, there's S&S Tire in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Okay, 602-508-0960 if you'd like to ask a question about air conditioning or any kind of car repair thing. You can do that, 602-508-0960. Okay, we talked about the old refrigerant, version 1. This was started in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, and I think all the way to the 80s. Last year, this year, my shop has sold 132 ounces of R12. So that's not even 10 pounds because it's 16 ounces a pound. So that's not even 10 pounds of refrigerant, although I probably have 2,000 ounces in inventory. The 134 is the very popular one that covers a lot of the cars, and you'll be able to tell because, again, 132 ounces for the R12, and I've sold 7,278 ounces of the R134. So you can see a difference. Now, on the R1234, which is the brand new Freon, version 3, let's call it the brand new Freon, I haven't sold any of that yet because none of the cars have been out of warranty yet, so I won't see the cars until they're out of warranty. But I suspect we'll sell the heck out of that. One last thing. When you go and install refrigerant yourself, or maybe your grandson or your son or maybe your husband goes down to the auto parts store and talks to the three-whiskered kid and says, you know, I want to top off my refrigeration system, almost all of those cans brags about having a way to seal leaks, almost every single one of them. Now, here's the problem with that. Our equipment that costs $5,000 to $10,000 cannot handle a stop leak. And when we inhale a stop leak, then our machines go down and the repair costs can be between 25 and 50% of the value of the machine. There was a newspaper article not too long ago that I read, but I don't remember what city it was in. And the shop, the person brought the car in and didn't tell the shop that they had, you know, some stop leak in their air conditioning system. So the shop pulled out all their refrigerant and it wiped out their machine. So the shop said, you know, your car damaged my machine, so I would like you to pay for it. And the customer said, you know, go to heck or whatever. So the shop sued the customer, and the customer's car insurance got involved because they sued the customer and their car insurance company. And believe it or not, the insurance company paid the claim. And I understand that this is what happened. When you have full coverage, you have collision and comprehensive. Now, comprehensive is damage to your car by others, and collision covers you for liability and also the repair of your car. And I think you get liability. You can get straight liability, then you can get liability in comprehensive, and then you can get liability in full coverage. So nevertheless, the insurance company paid for the piece of equipment. I'm sure the customer had to pay their deductible, and I would hope their deductible wasn't $5,000 because that's what the value of the machine was. So you want to be careful about that. I don't think I'm going to do that to any of my customers, but if I find out that somebody's put 4 pounds of stop leak in it, and we ask people if they have stop leak in it, and then we find out it's got 4 pounds and there's marks of a do-it-yourselfer all over there, that might push me over the edge. But please, if you're going to have anybody deal with your refrigerant, do not let them put any kind of a stop leak, because I'm going to tell you, it's not going to work. If stop leak worked, we'd use it. If stop leak actually stopped a fitting from leaking or a hose from leaking or an O-ring from leaking, we would be using it. But we're not using it because it doesn't work. And I can tell you that we've tried it. All righty, there's somebody ringing the doorbell, and I am wanting to talk to him. How can I help you?
That would be Charlie, Mark.
Good morning, Charlie. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Hope you're doing well these days.
I am.
Hey, Mark, I called you before a long time ago on another issue. It was 97 4-pound fix. This is on an 18-size. Just turned.
Hey, Charlie, you need to get off your. I don't know if you're on your Bluetooth or not, but you're breaking up kind of bad. So,
I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Oh, yes, I can. Thank you very much.
Sorry about that. So, anyhow, it's a 97 Ford Crown Vic. I had it in for an air conditioning issue, which just was blowing hot air, and they surmised that it was a condensing unit. Is that the same as a compressor, and they replaced it?
No, the condenser's in front of the radiator, and we're actually changing it from a liquid to a gas. And if there's a condenser problem, then there are certain symptoms that can be causing it. The real question is this. Well, Fords have a bad habit of shedding some of the hose, the inner portion of the hose, and it ends up in the condenser and it plugs the condenser. Most of us will take the two connections off the condenser, and we're seasoned enough to where we can blow compressed air through there, and we can feel if it's wide open or if it's plugged. And I'm quite sure you could too. Here's the real question. Did they fix it with their repair?
No. They repaired, and I'm glad you asked that. That was my next statement. I've taken it back twice now, and I'm going to do a third time, but I'm reluctant. However, I've already paid them to fix it. It blows hot air within like 2 to 3 days. I just feel there's a leak somewhere. I'm not a technician, so I could be wrong, but this will be the last time I take it back. I don't know what to do after that if they don't fix it. But they said this time, you got to leave it with us for a day so we can figure out what's going on.
Okay. This is something I deal with every day. As a matter of fact, I dealt with this same thing with one of my own shops not too long ago, one of the shops on my best car repair shop list. Here's what typically happens. It needs a condenser, and you bring it back, and they go, oh, gosh, it needs an evaporator, too. They put an evaporator in. Oh, gosh, the third time, we need an expansion valve. Oh, sorry about that. Oh, my goodness, the compressor's leaking out of the nose. We need to replace the compressor, or the clutch is intermittent. We need to replace the clutch. And then the fifth time, oh, the compressor's bad. That's what typically happens. So you have to say to them, I think in a nice way, if you were my customer, I would hope you'd say this. I'm getting to feel like here that it wasn't the condenser at the beginning. In the absence of the fact that it does blow cold sometimes and then goes to hot, suggest to me, don't say it suggests to Mark Salem. It suggests to me that the Freon level is okay, so this is not a leak. So what the situation looks like is you may have put a compressor on that I didn't need. So I would like to know, I'm going to leave it with you one more time, but I want you to know I'm not spending any more money. So either you fix it, or maybe you just give me my money back and I'll go someplace else. But I don't want guessing, and I understand people make mistakes, and I understand you've been kind to me, but after 3 times with same symptom, the first time, the second time, and now the third time, and I'm sure you spent, probably $300 to $500 for a condenser installed, all the Freon, all the evacuate and recharge, right?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay. So So that's the conversation you just have with them. Now, you'll find out what kind of a shop you're dealing with, because the good ones are going to say, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. We need to figure this thing out. Now, that happened to me one time, and we tried twice, and then I said, you're not going to spend any more money. Well, through the grace of God, it was the low-pressure switch that was bad. Well, the low-pressure switch is $110 installed with all the Freon, and we had already charged him the $350. So I took the $150 out of his $350, and I gave him a refund and said, we screwed up. We just messed up. We got the wrong part. So I'm going to give you back all your money, but I'm going to take $125 for the low-pressure switch, evacuate, and recharge in the refrigerant. And he was happy. And he says, what happens if this doesn't work? And I says, then you're going to hear a gunshot up in my office, because I'll be sick about that. But I've driven your car extensively, and I'm pretty sure. And we did fix it. But everybody makes those mistakes. It's just a matter of how they respond to them. So the real question I always want to answer is, how close are we to being fixed, and do you have the same symptoms? And when you have the same symptoms, it's kind of like that old adage about insanity. Insanity is it's insanity when you do the same thing over and over again and you expect a different result.
Yes, sir.
All righty. Well, good luck to you. Okay. Good luck to you, and thank you very much. That's a good question, and hopefully the answer helps you get your car fixed. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you can certainly call us up, 602-508-0960. Gil is running the board today. I'm on a telephone line because we have equipment that is malfunctioning. When I'm in the studio in Tempe, in our shop, then we never have a problem. But when I try to transmit out of the ranch we have up north, then sometimes it works good and sometimes it doesn't. But they use that same equipment with a lot of other people, and they don't have the problem, so that clearly means that it's me. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and Gil will take you in. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, if you're on the phone, good. And if you're not, then we'll go on, and we'll keep talking about air conditioning, which I think is something that will save you some money. We'll be back right after this. Raised up from under my welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, before we go to the calls. Mario, you stay right there. Let me just do a little bit of work here. Action Auto Repairs up on I-17 in Deer Valley. He's been around and serving Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. I've known Tom since 1979. So no matter what kind of car you have, Tom's probably capable of fixing it. But here's the best part. As other good shops on my list, if we're not best, and if that car is not within our wheelhouse, we'll let you know. Tom's got ASE Master Certified Technicians, which means that they're very good at diagnosing, bidding, repairing, and then verifying that their repair is successful. That's what a Master Technician does better than anybody else. So it's really easy to do business with Action at I-17 in Deer Valley. Stop by, have an oil change done, and see how you're treated. Mario, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have an issue. I have a 2005 Ford Freestyle, 135,000 miles on it. Having an issue with my air conditioner, a couple actually, and I'm hoping you can help me out with it. First one is, when I shut the air conditioner off, I hear a flapping sound underneath the dashboard as if though it were closing or opening. It goes away eventually, but that's the flapping sound that I hear. Secondly, is when I have the air conditioning running and I'm actually I'm traveling along the road, it's blowing out cold air. But when I'm at a stop sign or at a stoplight, the passenger side warms up and the driver's side stays cold.
Okay. Well, there's we have two different ways to control it. I want you to picture the letter Y, okay?
Okay.
Picture the letter Y. On the left side at the very top, we have hot air. On the right side at the very top, we have cold air. Right where the Y meets, where all three pieces of the letter Y meet, we have this door, okay? And this door, if it shuts off the hot, you get cold. And if it shuts off the cold, you get hot.
Okay.
Now, the very bottom of the Y, the letter Y, is the air that you get. So in that flapping noise that you hear from underneath the dash is the blend door trying to find its way home. Now, when we take those dashboards apart, which isn't going to be cheap, we take those dashboards apart, you can't imagine the stuff that we find down by that blend door. We find all kinds of stuff that has everything to do with what people put on their dash, bubble gum, cigarettes, ink pens, lots of coins, just about candy, you know, jelly beans, hamburgers, everything imaginable. So
yeah, have kids, that'll happen.
Yeah, so the really the shop's going to go in first, and you said it was an 05. So I'm not quite sure that we're going to have the capability of talking to your climate control system because your car's 12 years old. Okay. But that's certainly where you want to start. But if not, then you're going to open up a manual and you're going to go to the blend door circuit and you're going to find out what it's supposed to do. And then you're going to get to it. You're going to gain access to it. Now, sometimes the door is sticking. And when the door sticks, the ratcheting, because the computer wants to open the door, but the door only goes 22% open. And it sticks there. So the ratcheting is the computer going, come on, come on, come on. So there's could be that the door stuck, it could be the linkage broken, or it could be the hinges on the top of the door or at the bottom of the door are bad or broken or sticky. So most of us will bid that as worst case scenario. Most of us are going to go in and say, the fact that it's flapping means the motor's good, so we're going to bid the whole blend door. We're going to go with the linkage and the door and everything. As far as side to side is concerned, you need to go after the one where it warms up on both sides, or go after the noise first and see if that doesn't accidentally fix the fact that one side's cold and one side's hot, because it could be another door that it's not uncommon for the passenger and the driver to pick a different temperature. So the wife on the right wants it a lot warmer than the husband on the left. So, but I'm not quite sure that yours has independent climate controls for the two people in the front seat.
No.
So, it does or it doesn't?
It does not.
Okay. So, the blend door is where I'd go. I would just figure that sooner or later, and I would say to you, here's what I want to do, but I'm going to tell you I may not fix that hot on the left and cold on the right, but I think I have better than a 50-50 chance, but I think what I'm going to do is going to fix it, but I don't know for sure. But here's how much you're going to spend to fix the blend door. And then I think you'll know within 3 days whether or not I'm right that fixed it. But I'm going to fix the chattering of the blend door. There's no question about that.
Okay.
But I just don't know if the other. I always tell people when you got more than one symptom, pick the one that's easiest to fix. Pick the one that's the least amount of money to fix, because sometimes symptom one will fix symptom two and symptom three. Okay.
Got it. Thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Mark. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me talk about guessing. You've heard me say many, many times that you got to look at the shop right in the eye or the person in front of you and say, I'm not paying for guessing. I'm paying for fixing. And if you think that you're going to guess with my money, first of all, whose money are we going to be guessing with, yours or mine? And usually it's your money, the customer's money. But let me tell you what a guess sounds like. Mrs. Jones, your car's a 1988. It's kind of old. The symptoms, I understand, are intermittently it just dies for no reason. And you have to crank on it for about a minute or two, and then it starts, and then you can go on home. And so it's intermittent, so sometimes it happens every day, and sometimes it doesn't happen for 3 or 4 days. Mrs. Jones, I've had a good chance to look at your car, and let me tell you what I think. First of all, inside the distributor is called the pickup assembly, and there's different colors, which means there's different upgrades. So your car came with a yellow one, and there's a black one and a blue one and a pink one and an orange one, and the orange is the newest one. And you have the one that came with your car, and Mrs. Smith, the only reason that they have all these upgrades is because they had a problem with that switch, with that pickup assembly. I can't duplicate your problem, but I want to tell you, only thing I can do is make an educated guess, but Mrs. Smith, I'm making it with your money. That pickup assembly, $60. To install it is $70. I got to reset the timing, but I got that in the installation. So I got 100, 60, and 70. Hey, Gil, what is that, $130? Yes, $130. Thank you, Gil. $130 plus sales tax, environmental charges, that's going to be about 10%. So we're going to take $130 plus $13. You're going to be at $143. So, but it's a guess, Mrs. Smith. It's a guess. It's an educated guess. It's a guess. Now, Mrs. Smith says to me, well, I'm a little uncomfortable with your guess. And she says, if this was your mom's car, would you make that guess? And I said, yeah, but I would guess that same way, but I wouldn't charge her because she's my mother. And so that's a good question that you can ask. Is this a guess you do on your mother's car? And what do you think the chances of fixing? Well, I would have said to her, 75% chance I'm going to fix your problem. And it's because the pickup assembly and the distributor is the one that this car came with, and there's been 5 upgrades. So I want to put the orange one in, which is the best and newest upgrade. And frankly, all the other cars that we take the white one out and put the blue one in or the orange one in, they don't ever come back. So you're going to gamble $143. And if it doesn't work, I'm sorry, but you need to walk into this knowing full well that this is a guess. That's what a guess sounds like. The other day, a lady called me and she says, I went to a shop and they said that I needed to do $189 injector fuel injector flush. She says, Mark, but I listened to you on the radio and I looked in my service manual and my owner's manual, and it says, it doesn't say anything about flushing the fuel injectors. It's $189. What do you think? So we had a long talk, and I'll tell you what we think, but I'm 20 seconds from the top of the hour, so I can't fit it all in. So you're going to have to come back at about 33 minutes after the hour, and I'll finish the story. But we were talking about $189.95 fuel injection flush that a whole lot of shops are selling, including independents, chains, and dealerships. It's very lucrative, but we'll talk about why you should or should not do it. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about car repair and stuff like that. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician, and I have been for about the last 30 years. I own a shop. I'm not here to try to get you to come to my shop. That's why I virtually never mention my shop. My focus is helping you get car repair and get it done right. I have a list of best car repair shops. You can go to SalemBoysAuto.com and you can look at the best car repair shop, and certainly those guys are in the class all of their own. So let me tell you real quick about one of those guys. And in the Mesa, I only have one shop in all of Mesa that's been able to pass the filters and the muster that I create. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been around Mesa since 1970. They have ASE certified technicians. Brian and Thelma run Thompson's Auto Repair, and I think they're the third generation Thompsons. The two of them together are just the most wonderful people in the world. Once you shake Brian's hand or you talk with Thelma, you'll understand that these are exactly the kind of people you want as your neighbors when you move into a new neighborhood. So they're on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. They have tow trucks. They know how to fix cars. So if you need your car and you're anywhere in Mesa, my only shop is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Okay, real quick, we were talking about the $189 fuel injection flush. This lady said it's not in my owner's manual, and I said I know that. It's virtually not in any owner's manual. Hey, how does your car idle when it's cold? Fine. So it doesn't idle rough? It doesn't kind of rock and roll? No. How does it idle hot? Fine. All right, now when you're in drive sitting in a traffic light, no air conditioning on, this is in the winter, the fall, or the spring, how does it idle? Perfect. Okay. How about when you turn your air conditioning on, you're in drive at a traffic light? How does it idle? Perfect. Okay. How's your fuel economy? Has it changed any at all? No. Okay, well, I'd skip the $189 fuel injection flush because you don't have any symptoms. You see, folks, every portion of auto repair has a symptom. And to tell you that you need something without having documentation or without having something is just a wallet flush. So those guys that are selling $189 fuel injector flushes, if you say to them, well, what symptoms are you going to fix with this $189 flush? You're going to hear the babbling just like you did when your son walked in 2 hours late after midnight, and you say, well, what's your excuse, Alan, for showing up two hours after curfew? You're going to hear him go, and that's exactly what you're going to hear from the auto repair shop, because they don't know what symptoms you have, if any. That's the issue. They don't know, if any. So just learn how to say that. You can say it to my shop. You call up, you need a power steering flush. Okay, well, what symptoms are you going to fix? I'll tell you what, I'm going to wipe some of your fluid on a white paper towel, and I'm going to wipe brand new fluid right next to it, and I'm going to send you a picture of the towel. Now, if you want me to save your old fluid, I will, but your fluid is brown. It's really brown and smelly, and the new fluid is pink and purdy. So that's the symptom I'm going to fix. And hopefully, with new fluid, I'll extend the life of your pump and your rack and pinion. I can't guarantee that, but if this was my mom's car, I'd change the fluid. You want me to send you a picture? No, I don't. Okay, perfect. You want me to do it? Yes, I do. Fine. I'll take care of it. That's what it sounds like. What symptom are you going to fix? I'll send you. Now, with phones and stuff like that, we can do that every day. It's not uncommon for us to take a picture of a brand new motor mount on a workbench and then your broken motor mount that's broken in half. We'll send you that picture because we got the two motor mounts out. We got the one that's broken out, and we got the new one we're ready to put in. What better time is it to take a picture and send it to you? So that's the reason why my shop asks for your phone number, your cell phone number, so we can send you that picture. Let's go to the phones real quick, and let me see who we got. We're going to start with Mike. Mike, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. How are you this morning?
You know, I've been better, but I'm in a pretty good mood.
Well, no, because you're up where it's a little bit cooler than where we're at.
You know what? Last night, we had, I'm exaggerating, okay, so give me a break. The winds were hurricane winds. My trees were almost laid over. This morning, there's branches all over. I checked the rain gauge. We had 2.5 inches of rain. My pastures have already absorbed all the rain. I don't have any mud, and I'm pretty blessed, but I was kind of scared last night. I was hoping those big trees, none of them would fall on the house, but I was ready for that. I had the dogs in my truck kind of close by, but the truck was out in the middle of the parking lot to make sure that if there was any trees falling, at least my escape route wouldn't be hurt. But thank you for asking. Yeah, we're a lot cooler than you are.
Well,
so what's up?
Your horses will be happy come eventually when that pasture starts growing a little bit more for them.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, I've got to kind of stay on topic with the AC, but I got two questions. I've got a 2001 Ford Expedition. And I do a lot of stuff myself, so I drained the AC out, I vacuumed it out, and held the check with no leaks, and then put new Freon back in it. And it works really good in the morning, but as soon as it starts heating up or the car starts heating up, and I do a lot of idling sometimes, I got to make a lot of phone calls and stuff on the side of the road, it just doesn't blow cold. One thing I've been noticing, though, is when I leave my spot, there's no water under the car, almost like that condenser is not working. Would that be a condenser problem?
No. And besides, that's the evaporator.
When
you freeze the evaporator up, which is behind the glove box, and that's the ice cube that we're going to blow air against, that's where you get your cold air. The fact that you don't have any water underneath your car is of no concern of mine. The fact that you have too much water under your car and you're leaving 5 gallons means that you're freezing that thing up, it's icing over, and then when you park it, then it leaves a huge puddle of water because it's kind of like defrosting your refrigerator. You're going to have a lot of water once you melt that ice. So, and it also depends on humidity. If you got a lot of humidity, like down there in Phoenix, you guys are dry heat, but up here we can be 40% humidity and people are dumping water all over the place, but the humidity is... The whole issue with the humidity is that when the air has that much moisture in it, then we have much more freezing of the evaporator. It's more than likely two things. The fact that you're moving down the road and the air is cool, and when you come to a stop, it would seem to me that you'd want to check the clutch fan. And if you're going to check the clutch fan, you wouldn't want to buy one that's $19.95 or $69.95. That Expedition clutch fan is going to cost you between $100 and $200, or otherwise you're going to be spending the rest of your life changing it as it doesn't make a 90-day warranty. So I've learned that because my dad used to bring me those $19 fan clutches. He lived in Douglas. And he'd bring those fan clutches, and I just replaced them for year after year after year. So finally I just told my wife one day, I'm just going to go ahead and get an AC Delco one and hang it on there. And then he complained about the AC or the fan clutch locking up sometimes, and it's temperature sensitive, so it's supposed to lock up. But after a while it worked its way out, and I never replaced another one. So my suggestion, it sounds like airflow. Here's the question. When you're moving through the air, everything is fine. When you slow down or stop and there's no longer air being forced through over the condenser and through the radiator, then that suggests airflow. Now, you either got the condenser all bagged up with bugs and dirt and trash, which means you have to wash it from the inside out. So you have to clean up the condenser, but they're more likely that the airflow. Now, try this. Next time you're pulling off the side of the road to answer your phone call, which, by the way, I noticed that you did that, I want you to bring the idle up. And then the question is how does that change it? If it actually makes it better, then it's definitely the fan. But if it makes no difference, then we have to look at a dirty condenser or a dirty radiator. So that's how I would approach it. Okay?
All right. Now, my second question on that is I've been noticing lately that when I start to accelerate up on the freeway, it dogs almost like it's got a bad catalytic converters. But I notice that it starts missing when I get on the freeway. Now, I had my plugs and boots changed at Kurtz probably about 4,000 miles ago. We didn't do the coils because we didn't feel like it needed it. And it does eat about a quart every 1,000 miles. Is there a way I could check to see if it's bogging down because of the plugs, or since that's got four catalytic converters in, is that something Kurt can find out which one's bad if they are
well,
bad?
Well, if you want to do it yourself, just crawl underneath there and drill a hole in front of it and behind it. And have your wife get on the throttle. You go drive it and get it good and warm, then have somebody sit up and put the throttle about 2,000 RPM. You put some leather gloves on and put your hands in front of the front one and the back hole of each converter. If the catalytic converter is plugged up, then the front hole is going to be moving air like a big dog, and the back hole is going to be a whisper because in the middle is the plugged-up catalytic converter. Then when you're done, you can either weld up those holes or just take a sheet metal screw and run in there, and that'll work just fine. The quart of oil is probably foul the spark plug, and Kurt will put it on a scanner and figure out which cylinder it is. So you probably fouled the spark plug if you're using a quart every 1,000 miles, and that fouled spark plug is your myth. So I'd probably get a little bit of help, because otherwise you're going to do a shotgun repair on this. The last thing you want to do is replace one or any one of those four catalytic converters until somebody can test them. And it's entirely possible if it's running rich and running oil through it, then you've got some catalytic converter problems, but you have to fix the front before you can fix the back. You can't keep putting cats on it just to cover up that spark plug. What I'd do is, if you're using a quart every, 1,000 miles, I'd probably run to a 30-weight or a 40-weight on that 30-weight first to see if you can control the oil consumption, and that's what I'd do first. I got to run. Ron, you stay right there. You'll be my next caller. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and I'll give you my email address. If I give you my email address, you can send me a car question, but please give me your cell phone number or a number to call you back, because I don't type very fast, and oftentimes I need to ask questions of you and before I can kind of help you. So mark@salemboysauto.com. Salem, like the cigarette, boys, B-O-Y-S, auto. auto.com. If I call you back, I'm calling from a blocked line. So when you answer the phone, you say hello, and I say, this is Mark Salem. I'm responding to an email you sent to me, so that you know right off the bat I'm not somebody that's not supposed to be calling you. So that's how it works, mark@salemboysauto.com. IMM Auto Service has been around since 1972. He works on cars the rest of us kind of avoid, the Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. Not really Asian vehicles, but the Swedish and Italian. So those Volvo, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos, most of us understand that unless you've worked on those your whole life, you really have no business working on those. Now, anybody can do an oil change. Anybody can flush the cooling system. But when it gets down to every time I do 61 miles an hour, the left turn signal goes on, you doggone better find somebody who's fixed that before. And he ain't going to be no three-whisker kid. He's going to be a gray-haired guy that's been around working on Fiats, or he's been working on Alfa Romeos or Saabs or Volvo for a long time. But if you want to find those kinds of guys, you got to go to IMM Auto Service, northeast corner of Tempe. And if you've got a Volvo in your garage and a Toyota or a Honda or a Chevrolet or a Ford, they can work on both of those for you. So they're pretty special, IMM Auto Service. Ron, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I got a 2004 SRX Caddy six-cylinder. Are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But if you can go to the phone and not be on a speakerphone, that'd be great.
Oh, no. This is it's a handheld, but it's not a speakerphone, okay?
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So what I have is I had a battery failure. And the guys at, it was at T-Bird Automotive, actually. That's where I had all my stuff done. And I went there. But since I had that battery replaced, it kind of sparked a computer problem on me. And what happens is, it comes up on the dash, okay, stat system. Which I know, they said, that's an electronic steering system thing. And then I got the little engine light. But no code, and then I get checked tires. This happens as soon as I fuel up. Now, I know better than to top it off, so to speak, because I screwed up doing that one time.
Okay.
But... and there's nothing wrong with the gas cap. That's all good, everything. But that little engine light comes on, and I also get a check tires light.
Okay. All right. Well, those aren't going to be related to a battery installation, but here's the answer to your question. It's not a matter of we can't tell you. No one can tell you whose fault it is until you get it fixed.
Oh, well, exactly. And that's what I'm looking to do, is to get this system. But if I take it to Cadillac... I got to go there with a jar of Vaseline.
Oh, don't say that. Obviously, you think that you want. I'm going to cover up for you right now. Obviously, you're talking about greasing their palms, but don't use that again. Okay. Listen.
Yeah, I won't.
Okay. You got to go after one thing at a time. You're going to go after the check engine light first. So we're going to go after that. The check engine light could be something in the evaporative system, though, even though you don't overfill the tank, then we've got a solenoid that's stuck open, and that means we're sucking fuel through the canister and the engine's seeing raw fuel. So the check engine light could be related to you filling up and running into problems. Number two, I don't know what the TPMS, the tire pressure monitoring system, is, but that's not going to be a tough one to determine. But I would start with the check engine light, and I would work through that first.
Yeah,
it's not possible. I can't think of a reason why it would be possible that the change of a battery would cause any computers, but there's also a possibility that on your Cadillac there may be some computer update, and anybody can check that has the ability to go to the General Motors cloud and plug your car in and go to the cloud and say, hey, take a look at this Cadillac. Are there any upgrades to the instrument panel or the air conditioning or to the engine? And they say, no, there isn't. The problem with that is the cost to go to the clouds anywhere between $95 and $128.
Yes.
So nobody's going to do that for you for free. But anyway, I'd start with the check engine light. Then I'd go to that TPMS, the tire pressure monitoring system, and I feel pretty comfortable that, one, you'll be able to fix both of them, and it won't cost you an arm and a leg.
All right. What happens at this morning, this is what happened to me. I gassed up. When it went click, I hung up the pump. I don't overfuel. Believe me, Tom.
Okay, move on. Let's go.
And then what I got was the damn thing wouldn't hardly start. But if I put the pedal to the metal, it'll start.
Okay. Well, you could have a fuel pressure regulator that's bad, and the fuel pressure regulator is leaking raw gas into the engine, and the way you unflood a fuel-injected motor is put your foot all the way to the floor. But you haven't said anything about bad fuel economy, and if you had a bad fuel or a bad fuel pressure regulator, that car would be billowing out black smoke. You'd smell sulfur because the catalytic converters would be working overtime, and your fuel economy would have dropped a bunch.
What I do get, is every time I fill up, and I don't care if I put 10 gallons in it, I get this.
Okay, well, right. then you're going to have to fix. I mean, I can't fix that over the phone for you. I'm giving you the best advice I can. The check engine light's the place you start. And I don't know what the check engine light's going to fix, but that's where I'd want to start. You got a lot of symptoms there. Do you want to spend between $85 and $125 for every one of those symptoms? Go right ahead. But I'm going to give you the same advice I gave you at the very beginning of this conversation. Stick with the check engine light first. We have no idea what that check engine light's talking. We need to go in and talk to that computer and find out what are you yelling about. Anyway, let's go on. Let's move on. Nick, you're up next. Nick, how can I help you this morning?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I have a son, a 22 years old college boy, and he's got a 2003 Saab. And I need a good shop. I'm on 16th Street in Glendale in Phoenix. And the symptoms that I know, I don't know all of them, is that his AC, it's about his AC unit. And when he starts it up, it blows cold or sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. So he has to turn it off and start it up again, and then it'll start blowing cold again. And then if he revs, he goes down the freeway real fast, it kind of quits blowing cold again. And then so we've dealt with a really great company, Kelly Clark on 12th Street in Glendale, but they can't fix this problem.
Okay, well, you only have two choices. You can go to IMM Imports. It's a Saab expert. But here's what I want to do. We need to do some more diagnostic, and you need to do, to save yourself some money. Here's the deal. You said that when he gets on the freeway that the air volume changes, yes?
Yeah, the high rev of the engine causes the air to start warming up again.
Okay. Well, what we need to do is we need to ensure there's three places the air can come out, the windshield, the center vent, and the floor. I need him to make sure, using his hands, that at all times the air is coming out of the center vent. Because if it's defaulting up to the underneath the dash there in the defrost vent, if he drives it and he goes to throttle up hard and he gets on the freeway and all of a sudden he puts his hands up there and he's got air coming out, he backs off the throttle and within about 10 seconds the air stops coming out, he's got a vacuum problem underneath the dash. So we're not going to be fixing his air conditioning unit, so to speak. We're going to fix the vacuum problem that's probably causing the heater to come on for a minute until he backs off the throttle. That's number two. He needs to determine if the problem is there when he's throttling up between 50 and 100%. If he throttles nice and easy, he may very well say cold, 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 24/7. But he says, Dad, if I give it more than 50% gas, closer to 75%, then I go warm. That will be very helpful to the shop that's going to work on that. You got two choices. You've got 16th Street at 25th Street in Indian School, which is Billy's shop. And, gosh almighty, you know, as you get older, you just kind of go to the website, marksalem.com, and go to Phoenix on Mechanical, and Billy's at 25th Street Auto. And give Billy a try, and if not, my suggestion is it's going to be worth the drive to go down to IMM Imports, and that's in the northeast corner of Tempe, so it's just west of the 101, just south of the 202, and there's no question they can identify and fix the problem. And I want to tell you something, their prices are unusually low for an import shop that works on the cars they do. I would expect their labor rate to be $165, $170, and it's nowhere close to that.
Okay. I'll give him the information, and let's see what he comes up with.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you very much for your call. You betcha. Let me tell you about one more shop real quick, and that's Larry Harker's Auto. Larry Harker's Auto is owned by Bob and Ellen. And frankly, Bob is one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. Now, him and I are of the same age, or pretty close to the same age. He has tenacity. It's one of those guys where you go in and you hand him 5, 6, 7 repair bills and say, here, the symptoms are still the same, and here's all the stuff that's been replaced. That's kind of like waving the red flag in front of the bull. Now, he's not going to show you that, but that's what it's the same as. Now, Ellen runs the front counter. Bob runs the shop. 38th Avenue and Indian School. Now, he does all kinds of maintenance. If you live in that area, you work in that area, there's no problem. He can change your oil. He can do brakes. He can do your emissions. He can do all that stuff. But what he really excels in is that diagnostic procedure. And just like all the rest of us, everybody has a window. So it can be, in my shop, it's as little as $75 or $85. It's not going to be more than $125 unless I call you and tell you that. So there's your window. As low as $75 is as high as $125, and unless I call you, I'm going to call you with a diagnosis and an estimate. So Larry Harker's is the same way. 38th Avenue and Indian School, a good place to go. Well, we've talked about a lot of stuff, but I want to drive home a couple of things. There's three things, especially ladies, should learn. And ladies, confidentially, the men can't possibly take direction from anybody, so they don't use these, but you can. Number one, you give them symptoms or you ask them, what symptom are you going to fix with this new suggested repair? Number two, you say to them, are we guessing with your money or are we guessing with mine? And that's kind of a good question. Are you guessing with your money or are you guessing with mine? And then when they call you with an estimate, you say to them, this is going to fix my problem, right? This isn't a guess. You always pay with a credit card, because if you pay with a credit card, you're in much better shape. I'll see you next week.